We are nearing the end of our mini-series we've been doing, our mini-series on the most famous sermon that Jesus ever preached. We call it the Sermon on the Mount. And we've done this for several weeks already, and if you've missed any of them and you care to catch up, you can always do so on our website. There is the audio links and the video links if you want to listen or watch. You can go to our website and do that. But we're going to finish up the Sermon on the Mount next Sunday and be done before Easter, which is exciting for us as well. But today I want to cover one topic before we get to the end in the beginning of Matthew chapter 7. It's so good. Jesus is going to give us a masterclass on managing our frustrations and our disagreements with those around us. Because isn't that a big topic, right? We don't always agree with other people, what they do, how they live, how they behave, how they see the world, whatever it may be. And so Jesus gives us a great set of tools on how to manage that. And we're going to jump right into it today. Ready? Matthew 7, verse 1, Jesus says, "Do not judge others, and you will not be judged." Now, that's a memorable verse. That's almost a cliche, isn't it, anymore? Don't judge, or as the old King James said, judge not that ye be not judged. You know, we throw that around like it's candy. And probably we at some point have been on both sides of that statement, haven't we, at some point? Probably if we've been around long enough, we have felt at some point that someone was judging us or judging something that we cared about, and we wanted to say to them, hey, don't judge others, as Jesus says. Or perhaps someone thought we were being judgmental and they said to us, don't judge. And that verse lands on us differently depending on which side we get it from. In fact, if we're on the side of someone accusing us of being judgmental, we like to use a different Bible verse because we can say, well, Jesus also said that we are to judge righteously. So you say don't judge, but Jesus also said to judge righteous judgment. So therefore, I am to judge just rightly, you know? And so that's our pushback, depending on which side of the aisle we're on. And he does say that. We'll get to that in a moment here. But it's interesting how much we don't like people judging, but we also want to justify our judging. And so you ever talk to somebody, and this is the worst kind of thing to me, someone who's being very judgmental and critical, and you say to them, hey, don't judge. And they say something like, well, you're judging me for judging, so you're no better. Well, what can I do with that, you know? You got me there. Or, hey, don't be critical. Well, you're criticizing me for criticizing, so you're no different. It's like the untouchable sin. I know you are, but what am I, you know? It's like, if I'm murdering people, you can call me out. But if I'm judging people, you can say nothing because you're judging me, you know? So how do you deal with someone who says that to you? They have this little buffer that allows them to be judgmental, and you can say nothing. That's frustrating. Well, we'll address that later in the sermon. So come back, hang in there. But let's first go to what Jesus did say, because Jesus does say both things. He does say in this verse, do not judge others, and you will not be judged. Do not judge others. But then in Matthew chapter 7, verse 24, Jesus says this. He says, look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. This is the controversy about this truth. By the way, he says, when you do need to make a judgment, look beneath the surface. That's a good advice right there, isn't it? When there is a judgment to be made, we'll talk about what that looks like in a minute here, that when we are in the right to make a judgment, that we should not make surface judgments. Because we can easily say, well, I just trust my intuition and I'm just right and I'm emotional and I'm going to say what I think. We're going to make a lot of mistakes if we don't slow down, be humble enough to consider the whole story, look beneath the surface and make sure we get it right, right? And that's what Jesus is saying. Look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. But which is it? Do we not judge others or do we judge correctly? Which one is it? Well, it depends on which mood I'm in, right? If you're judging me, it's don't judge. If I'm judging others, it's I'm judging correctly. So which is it? Is this a contradiction or is there some clarity to this principle? Good news, there is clarity. We're going to do what we did last week and we're going to start by going elsewhere in Scripture to kind of set the stage. Because a couple decades later, the Apostle Paul would write and tell the church and the believers who lived in the city of Rome something that would shed light about this whole topic we're about to get into today. So let's quickly go over to Romans 14, verse 4, and gain some perspective. Ready? Paul says, who are you to condemn someone else's servants? That's a really great question. Who are you to condemn someone else's servants? Their own master will judge whether they stand or fall, and with the Lord's help, they will stand and receive his approval. Now, there's a lot of application there. I'll give you the two big ones. One is that Paul's saying, if something doesn't belong to you, then why are you judging? Why are you condemning? They don't belong to you. They belong to God ultimately, right? That's why we say only God can judge me. That's where that comes from. They don't belong to you. They belong to God. So keep your hands out of it. That's a good principle. We should embrace that. But it's more than that. He uses the illustration of judging someone else's servants. And the idea would be, and maybe in those cases, servanthood was a little bit less ideal than it is today. But in today's culture, we consider that employment. You serve someone for pay. You help their business or whatever, and they pay you. And here's the principle. If someone might have an area of authority. In fact, here's the whole idea right here. Many times in life, we find that we have an area of responsibility or an area of authority. I'll give you a couple examples in a moment here. A couple areas of responsibility or areas of authority. And within our area of authority, that's where Jesus teaches that we must judge correctly. Because it's our responsibility. We must, but we must do it right. But outside of our area of authority, it's what Paul's saying here, outside of our area of authority, we have no business to do that. That's why Jesus says, don't judge others. It's not your concern, it's not your area of responsibility. This is a very big idea. In fact, this is the beginning point of our four big takeaways today. The first one is this: know your area of authority and lead justly within it. Because here's why. Okay, here's an example. I go start a business. I start a business, the business grows, and I hire some employees to work for me. And my employees are coming, but all of a sudden, one of my employees starts not showing up at all, often, or not showing up on time, or coming in high or drunk, or coming in and not doing the work, or causing damage to the product, or causing problems with the business. And I can't sit back in my company and say, well, I'm not supposed to judge. Who am I to judge? I guess do what you're going to do. No, this is my responsibility. I have an area of authority here. I've got to be able to step in and say, we don't do that here. This is what's expected of us here. Now, it's important that when I do that, I do it the right way. This is what Jesus was saying about judging correctly. I don't make surface judgments or emotional thoughts or just abuse my authority because I think I'm right. I am accountable. It's a heavy weight of accountability when you have authority to make sure you get this right. You treat people right. It's important to God that we treat people right. So I must judge correctly. But I have to make judgment calls in my area of authority. But that does not give me the right to go across town to some local business and walk in and say, hey, you're doing this all wrong here. And I have a reason to tell you so because I myself own a business. So therefore, I have an opinion about yours. Or I'm going to walk into some other business and say to their employees, I want you to behave this way. Well, who are you? Well, I have employees too. Well, nice for you. This is not my area of authority. So I have hands off. We get that, right? Let's pick on another example, parenting. When we're raising children, that's under our area of authority while they're minors. Now they grow up to be adults and we don't have authority there anymore. We hope to have influence, but there's multiple factors that can phase into how much influence we have. We want to have a relationship and influence, but when they're minors, we have authority. Because you know why? We are responsible for what they do. And so we say to our children, you can't go to that party I shouldn't hang out with those particular kids, or you got to be home at a certain time, or you can't do that to your body or with your body or in this house, or you can't, you got to do your homework and brush your teeth and go to school. You don't sit back as a parent and say, well, you know, whatever you want. I mean, who am I to judge? Well, you're the parent. It's your area of responsibility. You have to do that. Now, you better get it right. Again, that's what Jesus said. Don't make surface judgments. Don't mistreat people. Don't never use your position in anyone's life as an excuse to mistreat somebody. We got to slow down, get beneath the surface, and make sure we're doing things with humility and right. But we have to make judgments there. However, that does not mean we can run across the neighborhood and say to the neighborhood kids, hey, eat your broccoli and go to bed at a good hour and do what I say. That's not my responsibility. Tell their parents how to run their home. It's not my, well, I have kids, I have a right. No, those aren't my kids, that's not my family. So here's the principles, the first two principles today. First one is this: know your area of authority, and when you have one, get it right. Lead justly within your area of authority. And that's important. That's number one. Number two, don't judge outside your area of authority. Leave that to God and to those who have say-so in that area, and that's not you and me. And I know this is very countercultural because we're all experts at other people's lives now, aren't we? Social media has not helped that. Like, please. It asks me on Facebook, what's on my mind? So I must tell it. It was on my mind, you know? So we feel with the expertise. But anyhow, but we should not judge outside of our area and judge rightly within it. So let's go back to our main passage. Go back to Matthew 7, the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says, do not judge others and you will not be judged. This is a big idea. By the way, this sounds like Jesus is scolding. He might be, but I don't know. But here's what he's saying. He's saying, look, I came in love. What are you saying about God's love earlier? The whole famous verse of the Bible that God so loved the world that he gave his son is followed by the very next verse that God sent his son into the world not to judge the world, but to save the world. And as someone was reminded this week in something I saw, if God sent his son into the world not to judge the world, but to save the world, he probably didn't send me into the world to judge the world either. So here's the thing. Do not judge others, Jesus says. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Now here's the tricky part. Here's where it gets hard. You're like, Arlen, I feel like I have not judged others, and yet I have still been judged. So Jesus, that didn't happen for me. Like, I'm not judgmental at all, but I get judged by others all the time, so that didn't work out. Now, I want to answer that in a couple of ways. First of all, we're probably more judgmental than we think we are because we excuse ourselves. When we are judgmental, we're like, well, I didn't mean anything by it. I didn't mean anything by it. I'm a good person. I meant well. They should understand where I was coming from. We always excuse the things that people would be offended by from us as if we're well-intentioned. I'm not being judgmental. But if someone else is judgmental to us, it is heavy. So our perspective gets skewed. But the second thing is this. I don't think Jesus is saying that no individual person will ever judge us if we don't judge others. He's teaching a principle that if we get from this world what we put into this world as a whole, you don't have to believe in Jesus' message to believe in karma, right? Jesus is saying, look, here's the idea. If you are a judgy person, don't be surprised if people start being judgy back to you. But not just people, God. The idea is that when we judge others, God says, watch out now, you'll be judged. Don't judge others, you will not be judged. He's talking about how people will respond to us, but also how God responds to us. And if that's a new thought to you, let me just try and, I got to tiptoe into some new space without going too far because I'm going to get ahead of myself for a different week. But here goes. Many times in the teaching of Jesus, many times in his teaching, he says over and over that we set the groundwork for how God will deal with us according to how we treat other people. He says it over and over and over again. And in fact, here's the thought. He says it 4 or 5 times in the Sermon on the Mount that we've been studying. 4 or 5 times he teaches that truth. In every chapter of the Sermon on the Mount, he teaches that truth. And you're like, well, Arlen, I don't remember reading those ones yet. That's because we've skipped them. And the reason we've skipped them is because in a couple months or so down the road, we're going to take a whole Sunday to talk about this big idea of how God lets us set the tone. And we're going to swim in that pool on that Sunday down the road. And so I don't want to get too into it ahead of time, but it's hard for me to dodge it completely today. So we're going to go ahead and get our swimming shorts on. We're going to wade out into the shallow end of the pool and get a little wet, okay? Here's the big idea. Over and over again in this sermon here, Jesus says, you set the standard. In fact, we saw this in the very beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. It was in the Beatitudes. Remember the Beatitudes? What did Jesus say in those? God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Here's what he's saying. If you want to run around and be mean and judgmental to other people, my creation, then don't be surprised if people give that back to you. And don't be surprised if that's how we play this game, God says. But if you want to go around and be merciful to other people, my creation, don't be surprised if that's how it comes back. And again, I'm skipping the best verses for a future week from this sermon. Very clear in chapter 5 and chapter 6 and chapter 7, this is how God says we operate. In fact, the next verse, let's read the next verse, verse 2. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. God says, you decide how we play this game. You ever play a game before, any kind of table game or other kind of game, where there's various sets of rules, and depending on who you're playing with is which set of rules you play that game with, because there's different ideas? Someone give me a game that you play where there's more than one way you can play the game. Different versions. What? Uno. Uno was mentioned last service, too. Uno's got several different rule sets, right? For me, it was Rook growing up. I don't know why we played Rook, but anyhow, who else has got a game that you can play that has different, you can play one set of rules or another? I see people play Monopoly that way. Anybody else got a game that's like that? Poker can do that. Probably most card games, right? You can have different sets of rules depending on how you're playing that hand. When we played Rook, we'd be like, are we playing the Rook high or the Rook low? You know, which color, and all that kind of stuff. So here's my point. It doesn't matter which version you play as long as it's consistent. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'll say to somebody, I don't care, we play Monopoly, you have a special rule, that's fine. Tell me what the rules are up front, but we'll be consistent with them. You can't, you know, shade it your way every time you turn around. Jesus is kind of saying, look, you pick the rules. You want to be a judgmental person? That's how let's scrutinize you. Let's go over your life that way. You want to be a merciful person? You'll be shown mercy. Look, you decide how we're going to do this by how you want to play. If you're kind, we will work with kindness. If you're horrible, okay, it's your choice. And it's a big idea. And again, we're going to see that more. I got to get out of the pool because we're going to spoil a different sermon here. So anyhow, then he moves on to a bigger illustration. He says in Matthew 7, verse 3, I love this, and why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? I love that. And we understand the idea. Before I fix what's wrong in someone else's eye, I should deal with what's in my own eye first. But do you know, that seems a little bit backwards, right? Because just logic with me. Who is Jesus talking to in this verse? He's talking to someone who is being judgmental, right? Who's judging somebody else. He says to the person who's judging, why are you worried about the other person? Now, here's the thing. If we're judging someone else, you know what we think? The person that we are judging has the bigger problem. That's why we judge them, right? We're judging them because they have the bigger problem. In other words, they have the log in their eye. We're not perfect, but we're judging them because they have a bigger issue than we do. They have a log in their eye. I have a speck in mine. If Jesus would have said, hey, before you deal with that other worse person who has a log in their eye, get the speck out of your own eye first. We might say, that makes sense because, hey, he's right. Although I don't have their problems, I have something in my eye. It's only a speck, but it's there. I kind of forget about it. I kind of ignore it sometimes. But he's right. No, pole buddy's nerfed. I have things I can work on myself. I get it. That would make sense. But that's not what Jesus said. Jesus said, you're worried about the speck in someone else's eye instead of the log in your own. Well, I don't have a log in my eye. I'm not the one who's messed up. What is the log? What is the log in my eye? You know what it is? It's what Jesus is talking about in this whole sermon right here. It's our judgmental spirit. That's the log. The log in our eye is our judgmental, arrogant, prideful attitude that we got to fix before we can help anybody else. Okay. In the last few weeks in the Sermon on the Mount, we've seen Jesus tell us over and over again that we are to try to make a difference in this world for his kingdom. We're supposed to be the light of the world, the salt of the earth. We're supposed to go out and do good things in community with others so that they will see that and glorify our Father in heaven. We're supposed to be ambassadors for Christ. We've seen all these principles. Most of us want that. Most of us want people who don't know the Lord to find our Savior. We want them to come to Christ, don't we? We want them to come to our faith. But what is one of the biggest reasons why people don't come to faith? Like, well, they don't want to. That's fair. People have a freedom to choose for themselves, don't they? So do you and so do I. But what's the reason why someone who might be interested in coming to faith in Christ, that might stop them? Oftentimes they'll say, I believe, but Christians, my problem with Christians is that they are so judgmental. They are so critical. They are so arrogant. They are so hypocritical. It's a major stumbling block. It is a log in the eye. Jesus is talking to people who he's been telling all along, this is what it looks like to follow me. This is what it looks like to follow me. You got to get that log out of your eye, though, because you're going to be a turnoff. You say, well, Arlen, I think the log is something else. I think it's moral failure that on Christians' parts that keeps people from coming to our faith. Okay, let's talk about moral failure for a minute. But I want to differentiate moral from criminal. Criminal failure, it needs to be criminal, it needs to be dealt with lawfully, never swept under the rug, never hidden, dealt with open exposure. We all agree on that. Let's all agree on that initially. When it comes to moral failings, isn't it true that Christian people or Christian leaders who have moral failure get more hate after their failure when they've been known to historically condemn and judge others? Always condemning others and saying, I'll tell you what's wrong with everybody in the world and this person's lifestyle and that person's this and that. Those kind of people, when they fail, you're like, oh, wow, they've been condemning everybody else and looking better than other people, and then they did that? They were doing that? The hypocrite. Now, if someone who is a good, gracious, serving, loving person has moral failure, it's still a tragedy, and it still breaks everyone's heart, and it's still costly. But usually they say, man, I hate to see that. They were such a good person. It hurts to see that person. There's a different an attitude depending on how judgmental the person was who stumbled. And we don't understand how much of a major turnoff our message is from a place of being judgmental. And Jesus is saying, get that log out of your eye. No one's ever going to hear, you're listening to my message, no one's going to respond, Jesus is saying, to my call to join us if they see you who follow me running around trying to fix everybody else and not seeing what's wrong with your own perspective. Because I can't tell what's wrong with someone else's eye when my own vision is distorted by the log in my own eye. I can't see how to really help somebody when my own vision is distorted by my wrong attitude about people. Let's keep reading. He says, how can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, and then you will see well enough to deal with a speck in your friend's eye. He says, if we can figure out what's making us misunderstand and missee people, we will be in a better spot to help people. But we are never going to help anybody effectively if we see them through a lens that's clogged by our own log, our own bad perspective. Fix that first. You know what another popular illustration is in culture? In the last recent decades, people say what? Keep your own backyard clean. You know that one? Keep your own backyard clean. How many of you have heard that phrase before? I think it's pretty common. Really? Four of us have heard the phrase, keep your own backyard clean? Or are you just all sleeping on me here? That is not that rare, okay? You're staring. Okay. Work with me. Keep your own backyard clean. What does that mean? That means I can run all over the neighborhood. You can run all over the neighborhood and tell all the neighbors what's wrong with their property. And someone's going to be like, if you looked at your own property, is how's my yard doing? How's my house doing inside and out? Here's the truth. If I were to worry less about my neighbors and worry about my own house, there's probably things I need to fix inside my house and outside my house. And if I have a zealous mission to make the neighborhood better, I could probably start with mine. You're like, aha, I'm getting the message, Arlen. Jesus is telling us in these illustrations, and this illustration you gave as well, if I can clean my own house inside and out and fix it up first, then I can go be the neighborhood police. And if I can get the log out of my own eye, then I can go fix the speck in my brother's eye, my friend's eye. Is that what he's saying? Sure. But here's what he's saying, I think. Fixing my own affairs, fixing my own house up, cleaning my own yard is a full-time job. And if I ever manage to get it all done, I'm probably too tired to worry about somebody else. And probably I will never get it all done. In my life, I have experienced that in my own personal life or in my areas of authority. As soon as I get one thing under control, something else is slipping. I'm always a moment away from something else. Don't you feel that way? You get this fixed up and then something else goes wrong. It's a whole full-time job to manage my own life. So probably I don't have time. And probably if I'm taking the time to worry about everybody else's business, something's being neglected on my end. Now you can apply this to yourself personally and professionally. I'm a pastor. Let me use a pastor illustration, and then you can apply it to you. For some reason, because of my job, once in a while people come to me and they'll send me a message or they'll reach out or they'll say to me, did you hear about such and such a church and what they're doing at that church? Can you believe a church is doing that? Yada, yada, yada. Or they'll say, did you hear that certain pastor or Christian leader that says certain things? Can you believe they're saying that? I cannot believe they're teaching that. What do you think, Arlen? And I always just try to get out of that conversation because I don't care about having that conversation. But if I can't, here's my go-to answer. I'm like, listen, I don't know. I have enough to say grace over on my plate at 13419 Parrish Avenue. I'm serious, my plate is full to worry about somebody else's. But we have become really good at railing around condemning all the other people who are out there, including in the Christian world, sadly. Churches who don't do things right, leaders whose voices aren't speaking the things we want to gatekeep our faith and tell others how they're doing it wrong. And is that really our place? Well, someone's got to do it. And we justify it with weird Bible terms. Like, we got to warn the sheep about the wolves. So we use these Bible cliches out of context and pull them to justify our terrible judgmental spirit about people we disagree with. And ignore the verses like this where God's very clear what we're supposed to do. You say, but how do you help people not know the bad stuff that's out there? Well, first of all, as a pastor, you know, I can teach a truth. Say, this is a common thing, that's a common issue. Here's the truth about it, and here's the error. And then people can know, and they can discern for themselves. But when we start attacking other people by name, other places or ministries by name, in my profession, I think that's very wrong because it's not my responsibility. Paul was very clear. Jesus was very clear. Stay out of that. But everyone does it today, not just Christian leaders, Christians. Social media has helped us be this way because social media has asked us what's on our mind. And now it's very popular. In fact, you know how influencers get influence a lot of times in social media? Through rage farming. Just stir the pot. We have some people out there, their job is to tell everybody who's thinking wrong, who's voting wrong, who's believing wrong, who's leading, who's teaching wrong, what's wrong with this ministry. And a bunch of us, we get sucked into it because the rage, it builds a following. It gets us all fired up. It makes people a lot of money. And so we get sucked into this stuff and we maybe even propagate it for our own personal, our own personal aura. But it's wrong, and it's taught us to put our nose in every place and say, I'm going to judge another man's servants when it's not my spot. It's hurting us. And so I always say, I have enough to say grace over on my own plate at 13419 Parrish Avenue and in my own personal address at my home, and I have things going on. I am not worried about things that are not my responsibility or under my area of authority. And where it is my responsibility, I better do it right. Outside of that, that's not my business. It's pretty plain. But there's one more principle before I'm done. One more principle. And it's a good one. Jesus is going to say something before I show you the verse. I'm going to tell you, it is bizarre. It almost sounds like he changes the subject. When you read it, you're like, did he change the subject? Or is he, like, that's pretty, like, it almost sounds judgmental. But I think what Jesus is doing is what all of us, what he's been doing this whole message, is what all communicators try to do. You, when you speak to people, you know that everyone doesn't buy in to what you're teaching the first time. I've learned as a pastor that when you preach a sermon, you're doing what Jesus is doing here. You say the same thing several different ways because one of those ways will land with somebody that another way won't. And some people get it right away, like, okay, I got it right away, let's move on, I'm bored. Others are like, Not just on a single message, like Jesus is teaching or I'm teaching, but sometimes over the course of a long ministry, I've learned, there's times I could teach something from the scripture and people will be like, that was really good, and someone else is like, I don't know if I agree with that. But if they stick around long enough, and they think about it long enough and hear it again, they'll be like, ah, I get it now. And so Jesus is doing the same thing in his sermon. Are you with me? Jesus begins the sermon by saying, hey, don't judge others. Now, those who came to his TED Talk who weren't judging others were like, cool, I agree. Problem solved. Maybe some people showed up that day who were judging others because, I don't know, they're human. And Jesus says, hey, don't judge others. And they're like, oh, that's a good point. I need to stop judging others. Thank you, Jesus. I will. Problem solved. But maybe others came up and said, well, you know what? I kind of like judging others. So Jesus says to them, hold on now. If you judge others, you'll be judged. How you treat others is how you'll be treated. And then that group is like, oh, now I get it. I don't want to be treated that way, so I won't treat others that way. Now I'm on board. Thumbs up. But then others were like, no, I'm still going to judge. And Jesus is like, how about you deal with a log in your own eye? Like, where does your house need repairs? And some people will be like, oh, he's right. I better fix my own issues first before I worry about somebody else's. Thank you very much. But there are still the holdouts. There's still the people sitting there saying, I don't know. I just think my yard's pretty clean. My house is in pretty good shape. There's nothing in my eye. I'm going to judge others. So Jesus says, let me talk to that stubborn group last. And he says to them in verse 6, don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. They will trample the pearls and turn and attack you. You're like, whoa, what is he saying there? Is he calling people pigs? No. Here's what I think he's saying. He's saying, okay, fine. You can judge. You decided that you can judge others and there's nothing in your eye and your house is in great shape. You are qualified to judge. You are holy. First of all, we bow to your holiness. Okay, you're holy, but you want to fix all the unholy people. Why? Why waste your time? You're righteous and they're unrighteous. Good for you. What are you trying to do? You're right, they're wrong. Again, we bow before your rightness. You're right, they're wrong. But here's the thing. If those people you believe are wrong, if they don't want what you're peddling, then why are you peddling it? It's like throwing pearls to pigs. He's not calling people pigs. He's saying, look, logic with me. Pigs and people value different things. Maybe pigs have a better idea than we do. I don't know. That's another story. But anyhow, they have very different things. If you and I go to a pig farm and I walk up into a bunch of pigs flopping in the mud, and I'm like, you unrefined and uncultured swine, you disgust me. Here, I got a bunch of pearls, and I'm like, here, this will help you. Use these pearls and find some dignity, you silly swine. I throw the pearls at the pigs. I'll be like, thank you. That changed my life. By the way, you ever been on social media before and seen somebody like telling you how stupid everyone is and how wrong everyone is and angry, ranting and raging about what's wrong with the rest of the world? And then people are like in the comment section, oh, thank you for calling me out. I see your point now and you've helped me come around to your point of view, right? It doesn't work. You go to the pigs and you're like, you pigs, take these pearls, you unrefined swine. What are they gonna do? They're going to trample them under their feet in the mud, and then they'll turn and attack you. Why would they attack me? Because you threw something at them. Someone's running around saying, I don't want people attacking me because you've been judging them. I was just trying to help people. I don't understand. I'm trying to help people, and I'm just trying to help people figure it out, and they attack me for it. I'm a martyr. No, we're not martyrs. We're judgmental people. Why would you give something to someone who's not interested? You got to earn the right for that. We all think we have. But unless we're invited in, what's the old saying? Unsought advice is seldom heeded and often resented. You know that one, right? Okay. So, one of the things that makes me sad as a Jesus follower is when I see Jesus followers, especially, I think social media has made this so much worse than it used to be. It's always been there. But I see Jesus followers running around telling people who aren't Jesus followers how that they're bad because they don't live by the Bible. The Bible says this, as if they care. It ain't their book. Like, don't judge me by your book. It's not my book. If you do that to someone long enough, they're going to say, well, hold on now. If you're going to judge me by your book, let's judge you by your book. How are you holding up, hypocrite, right? And so, but here's our thing. We always want to fix somebody. But have we been invited into it, or is it unsought advice? Have we earned the right? Well, I've earned the right. Do we think we've earned the right, or do they say we've earned the right? Have they welcomed it, or have we decided that they would be better off if only they would take my pearls and refine themselves? Jesus is saying, if you're sure you're right, and there's no log in your eye, and you're going to help people whether they like it or not, don't waste your breath peddling something someone doesn't want aggressively. It reminds me of another, by the way, remember earlier in the sermon when I mentioned how that, when I said at the beginning when Jesus says, don't judge others, that we've all known people who've said, hey, don't judge. Well, you're judging me for judging, so you're no better. Hey, don't criticize. You're criticizing me for criticizing. You're no better. How do you talk to someone like that? You're like, how do you answer someone who's that defensive and you can't, like, they're, you know, I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you. How do you get through to someone like that? You don't. You can't. In fact, it reminds me of another famous pig statement. Since we're using pig statements, there's another famous pig quote that I love so much. I'm going to share it with you now because it makes me smile. It goes like this. Never wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty and the pig likes it. Right? Isn't that true? You know, I'm going to tell you, this hits me at home a little bit here. I'm really good at wanting to stick up for someone who's getting talked down to, and that's always a tender point of mine. I just, when I see someone judging or hating or condemning someone else, I want to jump in. So once in a while on social media through the years since we've had that for 20 years now, I've gotten baited into conversations where someone's being kind of a jerk to other people, and I jump in and say, hey, you shouldn't treat people that way. And it never goes well. The person I say that to now is aware of me, and they just go after me because that's what they like to do. And when it's all said and done, I got to back out because I don't want to do this all day. So I got to get out. And then they're like, uh-huh, that's what I thought, you know. And I just feel gross. And nothing good came out of it. The problem with wrestling with a pig is you both get dirty, and the pig likes it. And so here's the point. Are we helping, or are we just getting dirty? So Jesus just gave us a 4-point masterclass on managing relationships around us where there is disagreement. And I say where there's disagreement for this reason. Nobody needs help managing relationships where everyone agrees. If everyone agrees, there's no issue. If everyone agrees, there's no drama. If everyone believed like you believed, you'd have no negative opinions. If everyone voted the way you vote, they'd have no negative opinions. If everyone behaved the way you behave, if everyone worshiped God the way you believe they worship God, if every teacher taught on God's behalf the way you think they should, if every Christian practiced their faith the way you think they should, if every family did their family life the way you think they should, we'd have no disagreements. This would be easy. But because there is disagreement in every part of our lives, including with our spouse, right, husbands and wives, with our relatives, with our neighbors, with our coworkers, with our friends, because there is disagreement, we need these principles. And Jesus gives us a masterclass on how to deal with that. And he basically summarizes it in one simple statement that we all know well, and that is this: mind your own business. Mind your own business. There it is. Now, he gives us that truth in 4 parts. Let me review them and we'll be done. Real quick, review. The first thing he said was this: know your area of authority and lead justly within it. In other words, if you have an area of responsibility or authority, you have a parent of young children, your employer of employees, or someone's come to your circle of something you're doing, and they joined your team and you have a responsibility there, you're gonna have to make judgment calls. But you gotta get them right. Don't make surface judgments. Don't be brash. Don't ever use your position to mistreat someone. In your area of authority, lead justly. You gotta get it right. In other words, what is he saying? He's saying, mind your own business. You better mind your business or it's gonna fall apart. Number 2, he said, he was teaching us, don't judge outside your area of authority. Leave that to God. If it's not my area of authority, it's not my responsibility. That's not my place. I'm going to mind my own business. Number three, he's taught us, clean your backyard first. Deal with the log in your eye. And that's such a good piece of advice because it's a full-time job. It keeps me pretty busy. Clean your backyard first is a way of saying, mind your own business. Don't you have enough on your plate? I do. And then the last thing he's saying is this. Don't insert your opinion where it isn't wanted or valued. And I know, look, I've been around the game long enough to know how people use the Bible. I said it so many times, it was always a verse for anything we want to do. And we'll say things like, well, you know, open rebuke is better than secret love. Sure. Also, open love is better than secret rebuke. I mean, we can play that game all day long. What does that mean to you? Is that a true truth you're embracing? Which is, that is a truth. Or is that an excuse to judge? Another one I grew up with in church was, well, faithful are the wounds of a friend. I'm wounding you because I'm your friend, and these are faithful wounds. Does that how the other person feels? Or have I just decided that they should feel that way? That these are faithful wounds from a friend, that they are grateful for that? I think that people have got to give you the right to speak. Look, I believe there's a place. I think when we get the log out of our own eye, we are positioned to help somebody else as it's welcomed. If someone comes and welcomes my input, I'm glad to give it. But they can walk away, and that's their freedom. So be careful that we don't use weird terms to justify why we judge people. Don't assert your opinion where it's not wanted or valued. Mind your own business. Four parts, four simple truths that Jesus taught in this passage. And I hope they help you because again, Jesus, what does the first say? God so loved the world. Isn't that what we just sang about earlier? God's love. But the very next verse, John 3:17, God sent his son not to judge the world, but to save the world. And Jesus is saying to his followers, look, I'm here to, I love you. I'm here to make a difference. I love you first. Now, if you'll receive my love and come to me, then I can work on helping you change. If we come to Jesus and embrace his love, then we'll give him room to change us. We'll give him permission to speak into our lives, and he will bring other change. But it begins with loving us first. If we can love others the way that Jesus loves us, it will give us an opportunity, potentially, to help other people find their path better. But it begins with love. And it never judges where it's not invited. And so, a masterclass on relationships. And I hope that somewhere will be better because we saw it. We'll finish the Sermon on the Mount next Sunday. Let's pray.